Rainbow Islands, a pixel perfect port on Amigos, everything Amiga. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Amigos. I'm John.
And I'm Aaron.
And today, Aaron, we're talking about Rainbow Islands.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, right before we started streaming, Aaron, I was telling you about my plans to grow this beard, right?
Yeah.
And so I wanted to talk a little bit about why I decided to grow the beard, okay? Because I know there are going to be questions. Just like when you shaved your beard, the internet erupted into, you know, sort of this controversy.
It was pretty unanimous in its hatred for what I did.
Well, there were strong opinions. Yep. So I'm sure people will have strong opinions about my decision to grow a beard. You know, that's how it works. So I was on the internet. You know, I was hovering around my usual haunts. I was at r/neckfat, and there was a post on there about, you know, how do you deal with it? How do you look at yourself with the neck fat? And then a guy was like, when I grew a beard, my neck fat perception went down considerably. And I was like, hey, that combined with the fact that, like, you know, whenever you were talking about when you didn't have a beard, people couldn't stand to look at your hideous face. And I was like, well, what if my hideous face has been like this by default? So once I grow a beard, it's going to elevate my appearance even more. So it's a dual win: elimination of neck fat and elimination of hideous face. What do you think?
I think you're a very attractive man, Bode. I think your neck fat situation is overblown, frankly. And while I think growing a beard is always a pretty good idea.
Do you have any tips for a first time beard grower?
I do. My first tip is don't cut it at any point. And then secondly, you're going to get to a point where your beard, because especially if you're not used to it, it's going to get itchy or messy. Yeah. Or annoying.
Yeah.
You can't let that stop you. You got to grind through.
Sort of already you're, there.
You're going to get to a point, like I'm nearing the point now where it just looks kind of dumb. Don't let that stop you. You've got to go from dumb to stupid to hideous, and then eventually you'll lap back around to tolerable. That's the way a beard works.
How do you how do you put your head on a pillow without stretching out your beard hairs?
Yeah, well, when your beard gets long enough, you're going to wake up and look really weird. When I cut at the apex of my goatee a couple months ago, I mean, in the morning, it looked like I was growing like a Medusa head under my chin, just like crazy tendrils shooting everywhere with wills of their own. Mm-hmm. You got to go in there and you get the comb out, and then you hope you can get that sucker to lay down, because sometimes the beard's a jerk. You know?
I know that there are products out there called beard butter. Have you ever
Yeah,
used
I've got
any
some
of
that. The problem with that is it's a weird sort of thick goo, you know? Mm-hmm. Sort of like mousse kind of, but more like, I don't know, it's
like the good
oil
kind
based.
Of mousse?
But it's not fun to have on, especially if it's a kind of like stiffens, it's a weird feeling. I had tried some of that stuff, but I just didn't like it.
You don't
when I had the handlebar mustache, you have to put crud on that, and that's the number one reason why I didn't keep the handlebar for very long. I couldn't hack it.
Yeah.
You know, have you thought about what you're going to do with your face?
Well, they say you've got to give it 3 months before you can even think about that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I don't even know if we're still going to be on the air in 3 months. So
I never know.
It'll be it's one of those cross the bridge when you get there situations. Yeah. I'm just hoping to get through the itchy, weird feeling phase as soon as possible.
What does your wife think about the impending facial hair?
Well, she wasn't exactly for it, but I just, you know, I just told her I wanted to try it. And I told her, because when I first shaved my head, she didn't like that either. She grew to accept it. Same thing with the beard.
She liked the old
reverse
horseshoe.
Mohawk. Yeah.
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 It was different, you know.
Yeah. And so, you know, like just like with that, just like with me in general, you just kind of learn to tolerate it.
You're in the same boat I am in this one, Bode. You've got really not that much hair on the old dome, right?
Yeah.
And so really all you've got to do to like try to be different or enjoy yourself or change your look is to screw with your facial hair. It's your only choice.
Yeah.
What else are you going to do? You go really you dye your head, you know?
Right, exactly. Exactly. Now, I don't know if I'm going to do the beard dye thing that you did, but it also depends on how gray the beard comes in.
This is all natural. Dyeing your beard, see, that's a, you know, I'm not going to admit that I did that.
If I were to do it,
it would, you know, maybe purple would be a, because I think if you, like, for example, if you grew a small goatee, dyed it purple, I think, and wore a hat, you could pass for, say, 28.
Yeah, well, that my aim is to look younger, because band directing is a young man's game. You know,
What do they do when you get older? You're out the door?
No, you know that's not the case. People are band directors till they die.
I was going to say, I think you've got it reversed. It's an old man's game. You're in business for life, boat.
Speaking of being in business for life, Aaron, let's talk about Rainbow Islands.
How lovely, boat. How lovely. What a lovely tune that is.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of lovely beard comments in the chat. Thank you, guys. We will read all of those later on. So, Aaron, what's up with this game?
Well, you know, I wanted to mention before we get too deep into this, Boatster, that this is our second look show. We originally, and I wanted you to help me with the date on this. Our original look at this was way back in Amigos 38. Now, it's the YouTube date on it is from 2016, but I don't have any idea when we actually recorded it.
Yeah, it's going to be 2016 because anything past episode 25 or so would be 2015. So this would be probably January, February 2016.
And we actually, not only did we cover this, and by the way, I listened to that show. Please, no one go listen to that. It was the dirt worst. A lot of stuff I said was wrong and dumb. And you said some also dumb stuff. And together, we were
that hasn't
group
really changed,
stupidity.
Though, so.
You also hated the music. That's one thing I thought was particularly funny. Anyway, added bonus, I also covered this on the ZX Spectrum in January of 2020 in R. Sinclair 45 in what I would call a notorious episode of R. Sinclair, since Brent was subbing for Boat that day, and just
I'm sorry. I believe that was when I had COVID.
I believe you're right, and I think to cheer you up or to try to kill you, me and Brent sang in that episode. It's the only episode where me and Brent got together and did a duet. So if you want to be, if you want pain in your face, please go check out R. Sinclair 45. So this is my third go around on Rainbow Islands, Boat. But before we get into Rainbow Islands and the Amiga, I want to talk about the arcade version a little bit, if you will indulge me, Boatster.
Sure, man.
You know, there's a company, a grand developer called Taito, or Taito, depending on your perspective. And they were responsible for Rainbow Islands, but they've had so many unbelievable hits that it literally melts your brain. Including Space Invaders, of course, Bubble Bobble, Rastan, Arkanoid, Elevator Action. That could go on forever. Jungle Hunt, New Zealand Story. It never ends.
They're what you
tons.
Call one of the all-time great arcade developers of all time.
Do they get along? Do you think they get enough credit for their incredible arcade prowess?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if they'd only done Space Invaders, they would be remembered. So,
yeah.
I mean, they hit after hit.
The designer of this game was named Fukio Mitsuji, Boat. Now, I was interested, and we didn't cover this the first time we looked this over. I was thinking to myself, what has this guy done? Because he's responsible for two of the most popular games, which, of course, is this and Bubble Bobble. He designed Bubble Bobble. Listen to his other contributions here, and tell me if you've heard of any of these, right?
Okay.
He did a game called, these are all arcade offerings, and he didn't really do a ton. He did a game called Super Dead Heat. That's what you experienced on vacation at one time,
that's
I believe.
That's true.
He did a game called Land, Sea, Air Squad.
Never heard of that one either.
He did a game called Halley's Comet. That one I think I've played in MAME. He did Bubble Bobble. He did Darius 2. He designed that. Omega Fighter and Volfide. That was pretty much the extent of his arcade action.
That shows you that, you know, the arcade scene in Japan after the very earliest days sort of split off. And there were thousands and thousands and thousands of arcade games in Japan that we've never even, you know, that made no impression here in the States.
That's a great point, Boat. I wanted to look and see who actually did the music for this. The guy they've got listed here, composer Hisayoshi Ogura, and his claim to fame is he was the guy that did the music for the Darius series. Now, that's pretty much, that was his claim to fame, this and the Darius series.
Hey, Darius series I think it's still going on, actually, so good work.
Something else I saw and I was wondering about, and I would love for you to jump in if you have a thought. This game, of course, is the sequel to Bubble Bobble, right? Mm-hmm. I thought to myself, because they've got this listed as amongst the Bubble Bobble series, okay? Right. And I thought to myself, what's in this series, all right? So, and the thing is, there's a ton, like, there's a ton of Bubble Bobble something, mm-hmm. Extra Advanced, blah, blah, blah. Then there's Chack and Pop. Is in that series, which me and Britt played that on ARG at some point. Parasol Stars, mm-hmm. Puzzle Bobble is in mm-hmm. there. Bust a Move is considered part of it, which I think
Puzzle Bobble and Bust a Move are the same game, just in different. Different things.
And there's stuff like Bubble Symphony, mm-hmm. And you could sort of link Liquid Kids in there vaguely because one of the characters from it make an appearance in Bubble Symphony. But there's a lot of same type games. And I didn't go into every conceivable Bubble Bobble, but I played a couple different versions this week just to see what the differences were. This game was mega, mega, mega popular when it was released, and it was listed as it was in 87. This was released in October of 87 in Japan. In December, it was listed as the second most successful table arcade unit of the month, and it went on to be one of the top 10 highest grossing arcade games of 1988 in Japan. That is no mean feat right there. That's 1988. They were still kicking it in Japan, and to be on top of the heap, that sort of tells you right there what kind of action you would get out of this thing.
Oh yeah.
So with that said, you knew there were going to be ports galore, Boat, of this thing. And I'm not going to go over every port. A ton of systems received Rainbow Islands, including the C64, the Speccy. Apparently quite a excellent port for the CPC, the Atari ST, of course, the NES, the Master System.
So the NES is very interesting. Do you know the fun fact about the NES port of Bubble Bobble or Rainbow Islands?
I believe the NES port, and I'm trying to think the other. There were three ports that got additional goodies, and I know the NES was one of them.
Well, the NES got two completely separate. Different ports.
Oh yeah,
much like the I think C64 Double Dragon, wasn't that the game that got two?
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, there's several.
This has happened before, but yeah, there was one port of the NES version that came out in American territories that was from a completely different developer than the PAL NES port that came out.
How wacky!
The NES port came out first, I believe, and was the same one that was available for the Famicom in Japan.
Yeah,
but then they produced a port a little bit later on, I guess, after the success of Rainbow Islands on the computers, because it was done by one of the same guys that did the computer ports, and it's much more arcade accurate in terms of the graphics.
Mm. To go on, your PC Engine, your FM Towns, even the Wonder Swan, the GBC, Saturn, blah blah, it went on and on, and so but this thing is well traveled. You can find it on the Mega Drive, of course. So with all that said, it was time to bring this to the house on the Amiga. Now, it's funny. One company did a ton of the ports for the home versions, including like the Amiga and the Atari ST port, among others. And that was Graft Gold. And we've crossed paths with, it's funny. I think we've covered almost everything Graft Gold ever did, Boat. Mm-hmm. They've come up a lot on our show. And so they ported this over in 89 to the Amiga. Graft Gold, with the exception of Empire Soccer, I don't think we ever played that, but the rest of their library, Fire and Ice, Off-Road, Paranoid 90, Realms, Simulacra, Uridium 2, EnviroCop. We've reviewed every single one of those, I believe.
Yeah,
Boat.
Yeah, there's some good games on there.
Isn't that weird? I mean, so we've got to get Empire Soccer in there, Boat, to finish the Graf Gold total.
Get on it, Game Selection Committee.
This was published by Ocean. The publishing on this was real nutty. So I was reading on Mobi. This was actually quite strange, the way it went down. So I'm just going to read what Mobi's got here. So when this game was got review copies that were released in the mid 89, but the game didn't come out till 90. And the reason was, the conversions were done, but there were confusions about who had the rights to publish the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, remember we covered, I can't remember if it was me or me and Brent, but there's a publisher called Telecom Soft, right? And they were basically British Telecom, mm-hmm. where that was them.
Yeah.
And they would publish games. And so they got purchased, so they had the rights, and eventually they were bought by MicroProse, okay?
Okay.
And so technically MicroProse had the rights, but Taito said that the rights had expired. And so Taito wanted the rights back, plus they wanted all the work that had been done by Graf Gold. And wow. Graf Gold was like, heck no, you're not getting that.
Yeah.
And so there was a bunch of malarkey. And yada, yada, yada. I have not read it. I've looked, tried to find exactly what happened, and I haven't seen the exact way it went. But long story short, eventually, Ocean ended up publishing the thing, and the rest of them were just happy or done or paid off or whatever. But it got real dicey there for a little while. That would suck if you were a developer and you worked on developing this game, and then because at one point the game was developed, it was ready to go, but and the rights were owned by someone, but they didn't have the rights to release it.
So
and that's where it sat for a little while.
Of like Tetris and many other games. Of this,
yeah,
of
it was a nightmare scenario if you're the developer because you're sitting there not getting paid. Is the unfortunate truth. But eventually it all got sorted. It got sorted out. This was coded as well as many of the other conversions. This by Andrew Braybrook. We've talked about him before. Everything I mentioned from Graf Gold, he did every single thing. The graphics on this, Jim Cumming, who worked on Off-Road, Parajoid 90, Simulacra, and Stunt Car Racer. The music on this, Steve Turner, who worked on Empire Soccer, Off-Road Realms, Simulacra, and Virocop. You see the trend here. A lot of these guys were just Graf Gold regulars. And the box art, Bob Wakeland. The box art looks pretty cool. This is OCS, of course. And this is 1-2 player, which we'll get into that in a minute. There's a little something about that. So, in the arcade version of this game, let's talk about what the game is now that we've talked about where the game came from, Boat. What do you think the best way to describe the gameplay in this is?
This is a vertically scrolling platform game. That's what I'd call it, a vertically scrolling action platformer.
Yes. So, to fill in the backstory on this, such as it is, Bub and Bob, the heroes from the original Bubble Bob, are in the game. This time, they're in human form, Boat.
Right. I believe that the lore states that in Bubble Bobble, they'd been transformed into dinosaurs. At the end of Bubble Bobble, they are re-transformed back in their original human form.
Right. I think you've got it there, my friend. So now it's time for them to go on a new adventure. And in this new adventure, creatures are trying to stop you, and you've got to face the Guardian, right? You're trying to advance to face the Guardian, and you'll go through a series of bosses. This game has when you start the game, it has an overworld map, right? It's sort of like, every game that has that one, this that has all these lists of islands that you're going to be visiting.
Yeah, but this is a good thing. In the original Bubble Bobble, there were 100 levels or whatever, and you really had no frame of reference about where you were in the grand scheme of things. And so having this overworld map gives you a plan of attack. Like, here's where I'm starting, here's where I need to end up at the end of the game. So it definitely shows an evolution in how arcade games were presented.
Right. Now, this this overworld map will show you seven islands, all right? The islands are Insect Island, Combat Island, Monster Island, Toy Island, Dole's Island, Robot Island, and Dragon Island. Now, right away, we'll get the bad news out of the way first. In the arcade, there are three hidden hidden islands, three hidden levels. These don't appear in the Amiga version, the ST version. In fact, they don't appear in most of the home conversions. So you don't get the hidden islands, which is fine with me, because I could barely get off the first island. So yeah. I never got the island 10 was well out of reach. The islands you don't get are Magical Island, Darius Island, and Bubble Island. Now, this game comes up with a lovely full-screen graphic, and then the tune kicks in. But when this thing comes up, what was your immediate response?
I was struck by this game is very pretty. It's a colorful game. The graphics are drawn in, and especially, you know, it's funny when we talk about how popular this game is in the European territories. Yeah. One of the knocks against Japanese games is that they look too cute. Well, this game was a really cute looking game that was a really big hit in Europe. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why that means that Mario wasn't popular in Europe. But this game, it's colorful. It's got everything you want in an arcade game, because everything that you look at sort of arrests your eye. The enemies are moving around right off the bat. You've got a pretty background. You know exactly what to do. You start moving. As soon as you jump up, the screen scrolls up. So you're like, okay, I'm moving on up. So when I first played this, you know, when I first fired this thing up, I was struck by just, you know, how clear everything was, how pretty everything was, and how easy it was for me to understand what I needed to do.
Sure, I agree with that. Now, when this game comes up, you can just basically start the game right away. I had to look at the docs. There are actually things you can do that I didn't even know you could do until I looked at the documentation for this. So, after you watch the credits, you can, if you hit F1, you can start a one-player game. F2 is a two-player. F3 and 4 will let you select the control mode for the different players. The help key is a game pause, and escape will unpause it. And you can also play this with the keyboard with both right and left players. So you get a lot of options there in terms of how you want to play the game. You've also got, like, if you're using WHD load, you get you get the usual stuff you'd expect, various cheats. You can also
One of the cheats was actually just called Infinite Everything.
Yeah.
Which was great.
You could also just turn on your two-button support and that sort of thing. And so once you start the game, you're literally crediting up. I mean, it's very similar. I mean, this game in the arcade had a different screen layout. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you didn't know any better, I mean, I will say, with all, and again, people probably know by now that I'm not what I would call Commander Rainbow Islands, but I'll give the devil its due. Like, this looks like an arcade game. When Graphgold ported this over at Bravebook, he made a conscious decision to make this like an arcade game. It doesn't look like a computer game at all.
I want to ask you about that. What are your thoughts on creating a home port of an arcade game that you actually have to put credits in? Do you like that? Does it increase the feeling of sort of immersiveness, like you're playing an arcade game at home? Or would you rather than just skip that and it's just sort of silly nonsense?
Well, I'll tell you my thoughts on it. If I was playing this on the NES, right, I would not do that. All right? Because that's not the way I think NES games would frown on that. Because in some ways, I mean, they even take arcade games and change them to make them not like the arcade
game. Well, that was one of the manifests that Nintendo said. They said when you put out an arcade game on the NES, you have to change it to make it more console friendly in certain ways.
So I think that's that philosophy is what I would follow. Okay, especially on the NES. Maybe not so much on the Master System, or just on the computers. I would absolutely do it just like they did. Mm-hmm. Because if you're like I was back in the day, when you got a game home, you wanted to think to yourself, I'm playing the arcade game. And anything that would keep that illusion going was good to go. And I think more games should have done this. I know you're right, it is sort of silly in a way to credit up or whatever. But this doing it this way gives you certain advantages too. If you say, okay, here, you have five quarters, you are You're not, because in the arcade you could keep going. I believe you. I know there's a limit in the arcade on how many times you can continue. I think. Maybe it could be a dip switch setting. But at home, there absolutely is, unless you cheat. I think it's five goes. But I like that because you could say it gives the game a lot more replayability. But the main thing is that it gives you the feeling that I am playing the arcade game. I'm not playing a port. This is the arcade game. And people, when this game comes up, how many times has the words arcade perfect come up? We've heard it both probably a million times. I think part of that is because they literally made it just like the arcade game. I could be crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you notice that whenever they do that transcode nonsense that sort of, you know, masquerades as a port, they always include the quartering up phase of the thing.
Well, that's
too.
because transcode have to do it, Boat. They're transcodes. They're directly using the ROMs from the arcade.
Agree to disagree.
Your weird obsession with transcodes, that's even dumber than the AGA one. Anyways, so I think we could both agree that when this comes up, it looks nice. They have a rendition of Somewhere Over the Rainbow that plays, which is it's nice. When we reviewed this on the old show, it's funny, me and you both complained about the music. I don't know if we just had crappy emulators at the time or what was going on, because I found the music in this quite nice, if I'm honest.
You know, I definitely turned a corner on it as well. One of the things that I really like about this game is that the individual stages are not incredibly long. So you're not hearing Somewhere Over the Rainbow played a million, billion, zillion times. And when you get to the highest level of the stage and you get to the treasure chest drops down and it says goal, there's a little coda that plays that kind of ties it up at the end. It's not just like the Somewhere Over the Rainbow stops and then starts again. And that makes it not as tiring as it could be.
Yeah. And aside from just that, you get there's a little tune when you die. There's a little tune when you start back up. There's a little tune when you're on the credits, when you're putting your name in the high score. Mm-hmm, so they put in, and I'm assuming, because I did try this on the arcade as well this week, but I mean, and I mentioned this the first time around, I'm going to stick to it. When you're porting a game from the arcade, people want the arcade experience. And chances, I would wager, these are tunes in the same place they were in the arcade, and they're the same basic tune. That's what people want, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, you could, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with doing a better job at home. It sort of depends on what you're after. And I don't think that's a hill to die on in this game. I think the tunes are okay.
Yeah, and I think, you know, getting back to the Nintendo comparison, what I think Nintendo realizes is for a lot of the games that came out, especially later on the Nintendo, there's no possible way the NES can give you that perfect arcade experience. So instead of trying to do that and failing, having the developers change the game in such a way to make it more console friendly was kind of like a consolation prize for not being able to give you a picture perfect arcade experience.
I think you're dead on. And I will say, this is a philosophy that we see on other systems like the Master System and the Game Boy. The Game Boy version of this is real unique because it uses some graphics from the original Bubble Bobble to, like, I mean, Game Boy Color can't quite pull this off, so it does other stuff. You know, that's if your machine can't get it done, but you can do a little smoke and mirrors, nothing wrong with that. I think that's a good idea. So when you start this game, once you credit up, you've got your character here. And it depending on how you're playing it, I played it two different ways. I played it one button and two button to see which one I liked better. If you're playing two buttons, one button jumps and one button launches a rainbow out of your guy, which it gives you the name Rainbow Islands. Your guy has the ability to throw rainbows, and the rainbows can be used to kill enemies. They can be used to jump on. They can be used to trap enemies that you can smush. And jumping is just jumping. You mentioned that it's a scrolling platformer. It scrolls upward, but you're scrolling it, but it goes upward. And your goal is to, unless you're fighting a boss, is to get to the top of the level. When you play this Boat, do you have a strategy? Did you try to get to the top of the level, or did you try to kill as many enemies as you could? I never could quite settle on what I wanted to do.
I always try, most of the time, I am not a point presser guy. It's just not in my nature. I like to see, I'm a content tourist, baby. I want to see what the game has to offer. So when I played this game, I was riding those rainbows all the way to the top as fast as I could.
Right. I tried a little bit of both. And it's funny when you go up this thing because this game in some ways has a lot of the things you don't like, which is a million billion pickups. They're everywhere, and you create more pickups when you kill the enemies. And we'll talk about the pickups here in a minute. This game has a myriad of enemies. They grow more challenging as you go through the game. When you first start, on the first couple levels, your enemies will just kind of lumber around. And eventually, if they get mad enough, they'll kind of come down at you. But as you go through the game, you'll come in contact with enemies that will drop down in the form of a spider. Sometimes a beehive will come down on a platform and bees will start coming out of it. You get to the point where, like, ladybugs are crawling around, but ladybugs also have the ability to sort of fly up a level or fly up on top of your rainbow. There are other enemies that just straight up can fly. There are crows. You come across enemies that just are like helicopters or planes that they shoot. They drop bombs. And so fly and even have cannons that come up and have arc shots. These enemies will become more challenging as you get further in, but it doesn't take too long to introduce the majority of these, does it, Boat?
No.
And once they come out, like, was there any particular enemy that you hated the most out of these?
Well, I mean, any of the enemies that sort of hone down at you, like the flying insects and things like that. Because the enemies that don't have vertical movement capabilities, they're not really much of a threat. Even the cannon, you know, it fires its shot, but it's still only limited to, an arc of movement. But there are enemies that can go anywhere and do anything, and they get annoying.
So I mentioned that your player has the ability to throw rainbows. The rainbows will last, the manual says 12 seconds. That's probably maybe about right. I don't know for sure. But one thing I do know is if you jump on the rainbow collapses. So you can use the rainbow in interesting ways. You can, if you hit an enemy with the rainbow just kills the enemy, unless it's a boss. If the rainbow entraps an enemy, the enemy's still there, and the enemy gets mad. But if you jump on the rainbow, it'll just smash the enemy when the rainbow collapses. And, of course, the rainbow also you use to get up to places you can't jump to, or if you are in a hurry, if you are very good at using the rainbow, you can use it that way. How did you find yourself using the rainbow? Did you use it mostly as for travel? Did you use it almost exclusively to move up and down? Did you use it to attack a lot? Like, what was your strategy on that boat?
Well, here's the thing. I like to think that in the 9 years since we recorded that original episode, 8 years since we recorded that, I've become more astute when it comes to games criticism and as a player, just sort of noticing more things about what makes video games special. And I was dead wrong about my initial assessment of this game. I did not fully appreciate the genius of the game. And the genius of the game is the rainbow. The rainbow mechanic makes the game because the rainbow is the ultimate multi-tool. I love when games give you choices, and I love when the game gives you tools that can do multiple things. Like, to me, the worst thing you can give a character in a game is a gun or some sort of projectile. What do you use it for? You use it to shoot enemies. Okay, what makes that unique? Nothing. Okay, the rainbow is so fantastic because, like you said, A, you can use it as a projectile. You can fire a rainbow straight out and have it kill an enemy, okay? But B, you can also fire that rainbow. If you're skilled, you can fire it over the head of an enemy, trap that enemy, and then crush it from above to get extra points. This is where the point structure in this game is excellent, and this is what these games have always been good at. The reason why the Bubble Bobble family of games is so beloved, I'm convinced, is it's not just because the graphics are cute and colorful, but it's because of the way that the point structure is done, that the more skilled of a player you are and the better you can use the tools available to you, the higher your score can be. And so you know, the game becomes, unless you're just trying to see the game, in which case you're traveling up the rainbows as soon as you can. If you're trying to rack up a high score, you're kind of, you know, shepherding enemies together. So you can trap multiple enemies under multiple rainbows, because one of the power-ups you get allows you to fire multiple rainbows at a time. You trap multiple enemies under multiple rainbows, you crush them all at the same time, and you get mega, mega points out of it. And it's an extremely satisfying feeling, too, to kind of line up and perform one of these advanced actions. So the rainbow for that is genius. But the rainbow is also awesome because, like you said, it's used as a travel tool. Now, a loser game designer would be like, okay, you can fire out a rainbow and it lets you get up to a ledge. And so you can use it instead of jumping. But in this game, you can travel only through rainbows. If you're good enough, if you're agile enough at the stick, you can fire out a rainbow, climb it, reverse direction, fire out another rainbow, and stair step the rainbows up the level. And it really makes you feel awesome as you're doing it, because you can screw it up. And if you screw up, the rainbow collapses, you fall down. Now, here's another awesome thing about this game. Even though this game is a ratchet scroller, you do not fall to your death when you fall back down past where the screen is gone. You can fall all the way back down to the bottom of the level and still not die. That is great. That is great game design. Now, how do you combat players just sort of, you know, hanging around a level forever? Well, you introduce the water mechanic. So you've got water that slowly rises up through the stage. And if you do fall into that water, it's game over. But I love the fact that they just didn't take the easy way out and say, if you fall down past where the level is ratcheted to, you automatically lose a life. Excellent game design decisions. This is the hallmark of the Japanese. They thought things through. This was not a guy that developed a character, figured out how to move it around on the stage, and published a game. This is the result of a team of people that were excellent at what they did, that had a decade of arcade game experience, honing their craft and delivering a top-notch arcade experience.
Well said, Bo. And I think you nailed it. I think right across the board there, you've got this is a well thought out game, for sure. And since you mentioned, I want to talk about some of the pickups you get, because they do affect the game quite a bit depending on what you pick up. One of the things you can get are shoes that will help you move faster. You also will get stars that when you hit these stars, they sort of burst out and they sort of like nail everything that's in the screen area. So it's sort of like they're quite helpful if you get in deep trouble. You'll also get different pots. And the pots, like you mentioned, can provide multiple rainbows. And multiple rainbows are, I mean, yes, I can see the advantage, but they're, for me, they always make it harder for me. They're just hard. This game, well, I'll get into my thoughts on the game itself, but you get multiple rainbows, certain pots, and there's also a pickup that will make you throw your rainbows faster as well. This game has a ton of stuff in it. I mean, I looked at the manual. The manual that comes with it's practically barren compared to what the work they've put in it. There's the whole, you want to try to explain the diamond pickup system in this game, because that's another element.
I don't
of
know
it.
What it does.
Well, if you pick up diamonds in the right order, this game has set multiple endings, and the how you pick these things up will depend on what ending you get. Now, I never came close to ending. I got a lot of endings, but they weren't perfect. That's for darn sure. But this is something that came from the arcade. There's the manual is very coy. It plays this off quite lamely, frankly.
Yeah, and you got to remember that the manual was not written by the Japanese design team.
No, it says here, it mentions the pickups. It mentions three of them. Again, there are more than three. And then at the hints and tips, it says there's a secret room on each island. How to access this is confidential. And it also says, when the hurry message appears, get to the top of the screen as quickly as possible. It doesn't mention, I mean, these are vague.
this is your typical European, you're going to have to figure it out on your own. You know,
yeah.
We're extending the life of the game by not giving you information.
Now, with all that said, each island has four levels you go through, and then you go to a boss. Now, I can only comment on I saw some other bosses, but I fought one boss, and I beat him, by the way, finally. I got past this guy. which is a big spider. But I do like the, you know, I'm always like a game that mixes it up with a boss level, which is cool. And this one has a level for all the a boss for all the different levels that there are. So I thought that was neat. So with all that said, I've played this game now. Like I said, we played it on episode 38. I played this on R. Sinclair. I've played it again. This week, I played a lot more of the arcade than I have in the past just to get a feel for it. Because you've got, again, you've got a different screen layout and you've got it. It's, but I mean, I will, having played both a lot, I've got to give them credit. They, I mean, the enemies appear in the same places for the most part, and the screen layouts are very, I mean, they did a good job. Someone
this
sat down
and
really.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
This is a fantastic port. And that's the what I believe in my heart. Is that the people at Graft Gold, maybe this was just Braybook, maybe that way he was the only guy, but he loved this game. He loved this game so much that he painstakingly played it in the arcade and memorized the location, you know, took copious notes and figured out where everything was. Because, again, this is at a time where I'm sure that Taito didn't give them any sort of, you know, source code, a machine they could play at the Graft Gold offices, etc. This had to have been a labor of love.
Well, yes. I mean, he's amongst the best. And he did good conversions on a lot of machines, as I mentioned. You know, he did the ST. I think he did the ZX. I think he also did the CBC. He did, and they're all like, no one's like, boy, these stink. I mean, they're all quite popular. The CPC one, I've heard, I've got to play it, but I heard it's quite a standout. You know, and we don't say that often about the Amstrad. So it'd be interesting to see what that looks like. But I mean, yes, the conversions are tight. But having played this quite a bit in the arcade, I mean, the arcade. To me, the jumping is tighter. I mean, listen, there are advantages. It's because it's the arcade. It was the first one. But to me, the jumping's tighter. And game feel is better, all right, if I play the back-to-back.
Yeah, there are subtle differences, and the arcade game is better when you play them back-to-back.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's the same thing that we always talk about. Nobody had the luxury to play these back-to-back back in the day. And by the time that you got home, all those differences became negligible.
Oh, yeah. And this one more. I mean, this one, this you could not ask for a better port. But I'm just saying, and I, by the way, despite the fact that I had better game feel on the arcade version, I'm not saying the Amiga one was bad. And I'm also not saying I did a whole lot better in the arcade, because I had the same inherent problems that I've always had from the jump street on this game. Because I played this game way back before we did Amigos. I'd played this thing on the original Rainbow Islands emulator back in the day. Because it was one of the games that got its own emulator. And then the emulator ended up emulating all the stuff that was also in the same sort of arcade hardware.
Yeah,
that you know,
sense.
So
yeah.
But I never liked it then either. And the reason is, this game is, to me, just to me, and this is not a knock on the game, this is an Aaron problem, it's too abstract for me. I cannot wrap my head around it. I can't wrap my head around the rainbows as a weapon or as a mode of transportation. I just can't do it. And I've tried, I thought, okay, I'm going to give this a shot. I played it, I sucked. And I thought, well, I'll get used to using these rainbows. I got a little used to it, but I always hit the wrong button. So I thought to myself, I'm going to go with up to jump and see. And that actually, this is a game where up to jump helped me do better. And the only reason is I didn't confuse my hands. My hand is not used to having a rainbow button at the beck and call.
This is a game. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this is the exception that proves the rule, which I hate that expression, which is, I don't know why I said it. This is an up for jump experience. Absolutely, 100%.
Oh, did you do the same thing?
100% of the time.
Did you do it for the same reason? Because you didn't get confused as much?
Yeah.
Bam. Yeah. It finally happened, Boat. Mm-hmm. And so once I started doing that, by the way, the arcade has two buttons, right? And so this was the major problem I had with the arcade version. Mm-hmm. I kept hitting the wrong button. I kept moving the buttons around or whatever because I got the luxury of doing it. In my DNA, I've played so much, you know, Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. And stuff like that. The levels, the way they're structured, there's no, in a lot of platform games, the platforms are they always appear in a certain height or there's a an unknown cadence to them that my brain knows that I can't explain.
The biggest difference between this and a game like Donkey Kong is that you can see the entire level when you play Donkey Kong. So you can make a plan of attack ahead of time.
And also the fact that this scrolls, that you're scrolling upward, it instantly makes me panic. Now, you're right. You don't die when you fall. But, I mean, you can die real, real easy. But also, it's always something that's in the back of your head. I don't want to fall. And so it's a different vibe from most platformers, where you just, if you miss a jump, you just hit the ground. I never wrap my head around using the, because there are places where you have to use the rainbows. You have no choice. Mm-hmm. And when those times come, I inevitably fail. Also, the boss battle where you have to use your offensive, we'll use that rainbow. It took me, I don't know, a million tries to get past the first boss. And the funny thing is, once I figured out how to get past him, I could rocket past him. But it was just my brain had trouble.
When you're playing this game, you're essentially learning a new skill, which is not something you have to do when you play a lot of video games. And that's why I love it. That's why I think this game is a justifiable classic. And I repudiate all of my original thoughts from episode 38. 100%.
I don't remember you. I don't think you killed it.
I don't think I killed it, but I didn't truly understand it. And it was I don't think I understood myself.
I don't think
we've all grown up since then.
Well, yeah. Boy, you ain't kidding. But I listen, it's funny. I like the game, the look of it, the sound. I think the concept's original. It's interesting. I don't like this game. I've never liked it. And this week didn't change my mind. Played it in the arcade didn't change my mind. It is just not the game for me. I know there are. I am in the minority, and I accept that. And this is not a killing of the game, because you know I'll kill one. I don't like this game. I don't like Bubble Bobble either, for similar reasons. They're both real abstract and weird to me.
Have you ever played a vertically scrolling platformer that you've enjoyed?
Yeah. Mr. Deuce Castle comes to mind.
But it's not a vertically scrolling action platformer.
Well,
it's a single screen platformer.
Well, yeah, but you're moving upward.
Mr. Dew's Castle is like.
Okay, how about Wizards and Warriors?
Okay, yeah,
NES. How about that one? That's one I enjoy, but again, that's a lot more cut and dry than this one. A lot more. It's also ridiculously hard.
Another one that immediately comes to mind is Kid Icarus,
which I'm not the best at that. This is not my favorite genre of game. That's for sure.
Mitsuyama brings up the obvious: Top Banana.
Well, I will say, let's not mar the game with that. But, I mean, this game has a lot going for it. In fact, it's got everything going for it. And like I said, they did everything right. They didn't include those three levels. Since no one did, I assume either they didn't have the space, they ran out of time. You know, who knows? Maybe they were afraid they weren't going to get paid, and they just stopped making the game, or they did, you know, whatever they did. But I don't think that's too detrimental to what you get overall. I mean, what can you say? This game, you know, it's funny. This game comes up over and over for us, that in a boat. This and Bubble Bobble, but this one in particular. And I was reading, I think I know why, because I found some different little trivia notes here just to show you the popularity of this game. This game was ranked in Amiga Power. They ranked this the greatest Amiga game of all time in 1991. And then they picked it again the next year. It was a double.
Wow.
They doubled it up.
So think about by 92, which was arguably the height of the Amiga as a commercially successful platform, Rainbow Islands was voted as the number one Amiga game of all time. That's something. That's something.
Yeah. And then eventually, according to Moby here, Sensible Soccer overtook it and was the number one game of all time going forward. You know, there you go. I'm not even going to make a comment on that. But not only – so get this. I love this award. This won a ton of awards. We mentioned greatest game of all time. In 92, it was also number 7 greatest game of all time on the readers' vote, so it ranked highly there. Amiga Joker nominated or gave this the award for the 1990 best dexterity in game. That's a weird award. I'm sure there's something there in the playthrough. Commodore format gave us all sorts of awards. Same thing with a power play. Retro Gamer in 2004 named Ray Bowsy number 30 best game of all time. And this also, all the, I'm not going to go through all these, but all the other micros, all the other 16ers, they all, this ranked highly in all of their awards. There, so I was telling Boat, this got real good scores on the ST, so there's every possibility that I'll be playing this again with Brent somewhere down the line on the Atari ST show. In terms of reviews, Lemon gives this an 8.12, which I was actually kind of surprised. I mean, 8's really good, but I was kind of surprised it wasn't higher.
Sure,
and the cumulative
too.
The cumulative magazine scores was 88%, with a ton of magazines chiming in. The highest one was The One, gave it a 94, and the outlier was AUI gave this a 70%, which I was like, wow, that's kind of crazy. Even Joker gave it an 85, which is like 150 for Joker. So it was popular with that batch. Now, I'm assuming you got some kind of action on the Discord, Boat.
Yeah, we got a couple reviews this week. First one comes from Really Brett. He says, Rainbow Islands, great arcade conversion that plays well and looks good. Sound is annoying, but so is the sound in the arcade original. Highly recommended. Lord Soup writes, the first game I saw and heard running on the Amiga 500, swaying me to Commodore's cost-reduced home wonder. Oh, to have a controller with two buttons. Music was great, graphics were great, smoothness was nearly there. Not a lot of content missing. A super fun game that I remember so fondly in the arcade, on lesser machines, and of course the Amiga. 9 out of 10, Amiga Essential. And Pajaco6502 writes, I played the heck out of this back in the day, and this was the arcade game in my house. I haven't played the Amiga version much in recent times, and with the benefit of easy comparison, we can see now that while it isn't arcade perfect, it's pretty darn close, with many of the differences on the Amiga likely being down to technical limitations or commercial reasons. You get a little less vertical playfield, and the vertical scrolling is less smooth. But none of that matters. The game is still highly playable, fun, and deceptive. You are easily fooled into thinking this is an easy game, and bam, all heck breaks loose with projectiles and enemies flying from every direction. The learning curve on this is pretty good. The only thing I found irritating is with the game as a whole is that you merely have to graze the edge of a rainbow and you automatically climb to the midpoint, which led to a lot of infuriating deaths. Oh, and being able to play the Amiga version with two buttons is so much better. Up for jump sucks. I had forgotten how much fun this is, and I really need to get some time to complete it again. 8 out of 10. So, Aaron, we have the contrarian view once again on Up for Jump.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, it's not like we ever say that. But right. This, I mean, part of it for me was just because I was too dumb to get the buttons straight in my head. Mm-hmm. You know, before we close shop on this, one thing I wanted to mention, because we talked about, like, I mean, Graph Gold did some good stuff, no doubt, but this is probably the crown jewel. And we were like, wonder why this one got the most attention. This may have something to do with it. This was the first, according to a couple sources, this was the first game that Graphical did, their first Amiga game. So maybe that was part of the deal. Maybe they're trying to get the, put the right foot forward on this one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, overall, though, Boat, I mean, is this, we're not Amiga power. But where do you, is this near the top of your, we've played a lot of Amiga games, is this in your top 10 or top 5?
It's absolutely my top 10. Absolutely in my top 10. As far as arcade ports go, it's probably in the top 5, maybe even the top 3. I can't think of, I mean, I always think about Marble Madness as being like the definitive Amiga, arcade Amiga port. This is probably number 2 in terms of accuracy, you know, content and graphics.
I would put this right. I mean, again, it's not my favorite, but in terms of the faithful to the arcade, I can't think of one that's better. Mm-hmm. And again, I think we don't have to tell you that it's a good game. If it's your cup of tea, I think this is one you should maybe go back and give a whirl on the Amiga, and you may be surprised at how well it held up.
If you ask any Amiga repair technician what the most problematic component of a motherboard is, they'll undoubtedly mention capacitors. The electrolytic capacitors that shipped with the Amiga are 30 years old or older at this point, and each one is a ticking time bomb waiting to explode battery acid all over your motherboard, sometimes damaging it irrevocably. Don't wait. replace your capacitors now. Full capacitor kits for every Amiga model are available now at retrorewind.ca. Don't want to attempt the repair yourself? Use their white glove recap service and leave the intricate removal and soldering process to the professionals using industry standard equipment. Use the promo code AMIGOS10 at checkout and save 10% off your cap kit or service. Remember, make retrorewind.ca your first stop for all your Commodore computer needs.
Amiga News.
All right, Aaron, before we get into the news this week, I do want to take a second to recognize just a couple of our patrons. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/AmigosPodcast. I want to thank Petzl, K9Z9 Zap, Thomas Main, Alarm, Mr. Chip, Peter Price, and Herman V. Thank you guys so
much
for supporting Amigos. All right, Aaron, coming up first, Doug is back. Doug from Dynamic Computing. He's in his glorious new studio area in his new home, and he's ready to introduce a brand new demo. But it's not just any Amiga demo, Aaron. This is an Amiga demo created specifically for the CDTV. Now, Aaron, the CDTV doesn't get a lot of love compared to the other Amiga models. Where would you put your personal desirability of the CDTV? Is this a machine that you lust after?
Well, yes. I would like to have one, and it's because I'm an idiot. I mean, really, the CDTV was like, before the 600 came out, it was the ugly stepchild of the Amiga line, just because it was a dud. But it's always been a beauty. It's a beauty, right? And it's also, this is that system that tried to jump into that set-top box world, mm-hmm. again, with your CDIs and whatnot. And some of the more fancy 3DO systems that came and looking like a stereo component,
right?
You know, but you know, once again, modern technology has made the CDTV far less of a dud than it was back in the day, including the ability to accelerate these and add all sorts of power and peripherals to it. You know, so which is cool. But the problem is. The CDTV, it'll cost you big money, brother. They ain't cheap. And the thing is, you've got the CDTV itself, then the components for it, like the remote, and if you want the wireless this or the keyboard, and then you have to buy the additional stuff to jack it up. Plus, you're going to recap it. So it's just a headache, and they're expensive, and they didn't sell that many. So would I like to have one? Sure. You know, I'd absolutely take one. But I'm not paying the big money. You know, I would rather take my big money and buy something that's not that I don't have that I can't already do. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I'm sort of with you on that. Now, this demo that Doug is showing off here, he takes great pains to tell you that if you've got WinUAE, it's not going to work right. All the CDTV people are giving themselves high fives because they're like, yeah, we can finally do something that nobody else can unless you've got a CD32. And so what this is a it's a thing that plays some music.
Yeah, it plays blue saxophone music, according to what it says there.
Well, it plays a series of songs. Blue saxophone is the name of the demo.
Oh, I see.
This is it plays a series of songs. I believe that these are music. This is music that was created on the Amiga, and you can fire it up, watch the greets, and listen to some smooth tunes.
You know, I didn't watch this video, and I usually watch Doug stuff and stuff because I didn't want to watch a Doug video. It's just to me this just looks like a CD with some music on it that. You could stick it.
Yeah, I feel like calling it a demo set expectations that were not met. By
yeah,
me
where's the
personally.
Equalizer crap and where's the things that spin around
I
and
think
balls?
48K RAM in the chat nails it. He says it's a music disc. It's not a demo.
Well, I mean, I guess it could be both. Maybe the demo parts. I don't know. But anyway, check out Doug's new video on it. Maybe if you watch it, did you watch this in its entirety?
Listen, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I watched 29 minutes of Doug talking about this music disc.
Well, I didn't see it, so I'm not gonna kill it. But so if you watch this, Doug will probably say things to make us look dumb, which often happens. And
true.
But we love Doug. We always plug his stuff. So get out there and watch it.
All right, Aaron, coming up next, this is our only other story this week. Slow news week for the Amiga. Condi Crush. Aaron, when you first got your smartphone, were you bitten by the Candy Crush bug?
No. Gosh, no. Oh, good Lord, no. Are you kidding me?
First of all, with Candy Crush?
When Candy Crush came out and was big, the phones I owned couldn't play anything. They could barely call people. Now, I didn't have a fancy phone that had a cool screen. I couldn't play no Candy Crush on no phone. So, I never had. Even if I'd wanted to play it, I couldn't have done it.
Well, I've got a treat for you, Aaron, because you can relive Candy Crush for the very first time on your Amiga thanks to Condi Crush. This is released by a guy named King. It's been converted to the Amiga plus the C64 and plus 4 by Annie Stone and the team. So, Aaron, what are you thinking as you watch this this footage of Condi Crush?
Well, having not played the original.
It's a match 3 game.
Yeah. I mean, it just looks like a match 3 game. It looks fine, you know. Mm. That candy looks a little rough to me, if I'm honest. And those brown things, what candy we figure that is, Boat? The little brown...
That's bacon candy.
That's what that is?
Yeah, you got your avocado candy, your raw oyster candy, and your bacon candy.
See,
they do candy,
I like real candy. If where's the Tootsie Rolls and lollipops and, you know what I'm saying?
Let me ask you a question, because I've been meaning to ask you about this for a while.
Yeah.
When you eat a Tootsie Roll... Do you eat the mini slog?
Can you repeat that, Boat? Say that one more time.
When you eat a Tootsie Roll, like if you have a hankering for Tootsie Rolls and you go down to the Walmart,
yeah,
do you get a bag of the minis or do you get the long log?
Well, I don't really eat a ton of Tootsie Rolls, but I don't usually get the long log.
Yeah.
Because it's unyieldy. You know what I'm saying? Where do you put that thing? You can't carry it around.
And it's hard to eat. You kind of got to bite off chunks of it. I like things that come in bite-sized.
You
got to
eat it like a giant thing of corn. You just kind of like go, and that's no good. So, no, but I do like a good Tootsie Roll, but I don't usually buy them. I'm usually, Tootsie Rolls are sort of the weapon of choice. If I go to somebody's house and they're sitting out, I'll grab a couple, stick them in the old pocket for later. They'll never know, Bode. Yeah, they don't know what's been going on. You know, since it's a slow news week, Bode, let's go ahead and talk about BoFest, because it suddenly occurred to me the other day, Bode. Like, it's now mid-April, you know, and then next month's May, and then next month's Boat Fest. And so we get like maybe 2 more weeks of comedy fun time, and then we get into like panic mode time, Boat, just like every year. How are we doing this year on the old Boat Fest, Boat?
Well, Boat Fest is if you're unaware, Boat Fest is our annual retro computer expo held in our town of Hurricane, West Virginia. We are every year for the past 3 years we've gathered vintage computer enthusiasts from far and wide to basically set up your system, bring some cool stuff, play other people's cool stuff, buy new cool stuff at our auction, and just enjoy the company of fellow people that are interested in our sort of semi-obscure hobby. So if that interests you, tickets are only $30 for the whole weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And you can pick them up at boatfest.info. I know that some highlights, 48K RAM is going to bring a demo explosion. Lots of different machines running lots of different demos.
Wait a minute. A demo explosion?
A demo explosion.
He's going to destroy the building?
At the end. Yeah.
A demolition explosion right at BoatFest. I'll be taking my stuff home before he does that display.
If you are into the Naboo, or if you're just Naboo curious, Petzl is bringing a Naboo setup, and he's going to explain. He's going to sit you down and give you the full experience as if you were buying a Naboo new in 1984. Of course, you're going to have your usual display of Apple, early Apple computers, Atari computers, tons of Amiga stuff. Mobius is bringing his 060. It's everything is you're going to be able to see stuff that you hardly ever get to see anywhere else. And we'll have people flying in from Australia, Norway, England. They're coming from all over the world, Canada sort of still baffles me that we're able to get this kind of crowd together, but it shows you power of community in our hobby and how much fun it is getting a bunch of retro computer enthusiasts together. So like I said, it's only $30 for the whole weekend. Head on over to boatfest.info. Buy your ticket today.
You know, I don't want to beat the point home, but like this will be the third annual Boat Fest. And the first one was a real good time. It got a little dicey there with the venue, you know, but we pulled it out. And then the second one was a real good time, but it got a little dicey with the venue because of all the stairs and stuff and the fact that the place all the food was going to be coming from closed down. This year, the venue, there's no diciness to it. It's top shelf. I go past this place every day. This place is way better than we are. Like, this is way above our level. This isn't like the rickety upstairs room at the closed down bar. This is a venue that's brand new.
It's proper event space.
It's got full parking. It's got no stairs. It's got plenty of entry points. It's got plenty of outlets. It's got tables. It's got tons of space. This is going to be, I don't think, there's not a venue within 20 miles up here that's any better than this one.
No.
And that's a shoot.
And it's not just enough to have vintage computers. We're going to have a special event table. We're going to be playing some tabletop electronic football, some Sabutio. We're going to be booing. There it is, the Sabutio, the real Sabutio, not just the computer form.
Right.
We're going to have a game of Dark Tower with just the tower.
No, we're not. We're not going to be doing that.
We're going to have we're going to play board game, video game matchups like Quest for the Rings on the Odyssey 2 in oil drilling fun for the Apple II. What's the name of that thing?
Let me look back. It's behind me here.
We're going to call it oil drilling fun for the
oil
Apple
barons. II. Oil barons. That's
so,
right.
Anyway, like I
and
said,
an auction.
An auction. We're going to have Boat Fest Jeopardy. We're going to have lots of fun things to do. So make sure and check out boatfest.info if you would like to be part of our madness.
I'd like to plug one more thing real quick if I may, but just because the day is coming forth. I want to talk about on the April 20th this month, a couple weeks, at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's all going down, Boat. They said it could never happen again. Oh, I said that. But I'm going to go ahead and do it. It's the International Computer Club back again, Boat. I'm not even sure how many we've had at this point. 7 or 8 or 9.
It's been a lot of them.
But it's going to be all going down. It's 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, April 20th. Where all your favorite geeks, freaks, and demonstration masters are going to come together on Twitch, on YouTube, all from our Discord in a big fun evening of demonstrations and videos and some lovely learning will go down. It should be a lot of fun. We've actually got a pretty full card, Boat. I was looking at the sheet last night, the sign-up sheet. We got a lot of people on here, and I've also talked to Frank. He's going to be in attendance from Retro Rewind. He's always got something wacky going on. See, Pac Billy's coming. He just noted on the thing. So we should have a good crew in there, and we'd love to have you, gentle listener or viewer. If you're interested in watching, all you've got to do is show up on our Twitch channel or on YouTube at 4 o'clock on the 20th. If you're interested in presenting some sort of exhibit or talking or whatnot, there's a sign-up sheet in the Discord in the International Computer Club area. And if you are just someone who doesn't have anything to show this time but just wants to be amongst the panel, feel free to, if you're in our Discord, you can just show up. We'll be doing it from Discord. There'll be a room in there called International Computer Club. You can just roll right in and join the rest of us to kick back and enjoy whatever they have on offer. I don't think we've had some that technically weren't that fun because of the technical issues, but we've never had one where the people didn't turn out with the great stuff, have we, Bode?
That's exactly right. And how do you become a member of our Discord? It's easy. Head over to patreon.com/amigospodcast.
You can there you get go.
On nice, there tonight.
Nice plug, Bode. And I will say that these are always a good time. You always learn something. And the International Computer Club, Bode, is amongst our most viewed events of the year. It's you know, maybe third or fourth, you know, you depending on how it goes. So this should be a good crowd and a well-seen event. So if you're someone who has something to talk about, you want to get in front of a bunch of people. We've said this before, Boat. If you're someone that's got a new piece of software or you've got something new to shill away, brother. You're more than welcome to get in contact with us and get on there. There you go, Boat.
All right, Aaron, what do we got coming up next week on Amigos?
Let's find out. Oh, yes. Oh, my. Ooh. It's the lure of the Temptress, Boat. Look at that box art there, Boat.
That is evocative.
Yeah, because you got a hot, you know, a witchy chick, you know, like Stevie Nicks. But then you got a couple lounging demons.
Yeah. and then you got the head of the guy from the ST game over there.
There's a head of a dragon over there. The Temptress lure is getting is weird, creepy. Yeah. You know, I've never ever played this. Have you?
No, never.
And we've heard about it a ton.
Game.
It should be interesting, Boat. I don't know what the heck it is.
All right. Well, we will find out when we see you all again. And next week on Amigos, we'll see you then. And until then,
adios.
Amigos is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Patreon supporters help choose the games we play, receive exclusive magnets, and get access to the Amigos Retro Gaming Discord server. Visit patreon.com/AmigosPodcast if you'd like to support the show and join our community.